Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns, the Anti-Federalist. They absolutely got it right here on Liberty Works Radio Network, where liberty does. It does. It works for you. Well, liberty's supposed to work for you. One of the things that I'm coming to the ultimate conclusion of is that nobody understands what liberty really is. And you know what? I'm not the only one that has that point of view. What we're going to talk about today is, once again, a lot of different things, and we may not have the time to even get to the conclusion, which I never do. I never get through everything because there's so much. There's so much to relate of today into the mirrors of history. And the one that is really going to grab us today is a dissertation on the canon and feudal law by John Adams in 1765. I always say that the Anti-Federalists got it right, but one has to understand that the early writings of the founders, and remember, I discriminate between what a founder is and what a framer is. The founders are those within that period of the 1730s, 1720s, actually, all the way through to the Constitutional Convention. At the Constitutional Convention, or actually it would be the Maryland Convention, then through about 1803, I call those the framers. And there's a distinction as to why, and that's where we see the separation of the various groups into now parties instead of being single-minded, single-focused. What we had at the period of time, and once again in 65, was the whole idea of what was going on with the Stamp Act. Now remember that John Adams was younger than Samuel Adams, pretty much younger. I'll get into the details of that maybe a little bit more in the next segment. But one of the things that if we take and we start looking at today, and we look at all that is going on in the media, all that is going on in the evil, it's no different than what was happening during this period of the Stamp Act. In fact, last week and in between a couple weeks, 3 weeks ago or so, I continue to bring out that it's worse in some regards, because what we had and what we were battling at that time were the globalists, the feudalistic mindset that was built with inside the structure in England and on the continent, and all of the various components of what it meant to go for economy over liberty. And to that point, one of the things that I want to bring up, talking about someone that has a lust with a capital L, maybe the whole world, lust, W-O-R-D, word, lust, all capitalized, is that the young, snot-nosed person by the last name of Zuckerberg. And I call him a young snot-nosed because his realities are, I'll tell you, he is nothing but economy. So he has a lust for economy over liberty. Why do I say that? Well, the articles are out there is how he and Facebook are giving in to expand their market because they're being market-driven. Do I believe in a free economy? Well, I believe in a fair economy and fair trade, not free trade. I've told you and we've talked about that, what fair trade is versus free trade. Free trade is a free-for-all in many respects, where those no different than the East India Trading Company are the globalist leaders, and everyone else becomes subservient. Or, as I talk about, and which we'll talk about later, is modern feudalism in relationship to feudal law. So back to Zuckerberg, the young snot-nosed guy, for a minute. What he's doing is that he is capitulating to evil, in that he is stopping free speech and designing software to stop free speech and redefine news so he can claim fake news because of the likes of Russia, Turkey, China, Germany, and yes, Pakistan and all of these other dictatorial, and I have to say Merkel is dictatorial because she had people arrested and thrown in prison for making comments on the mass immigration insanity that is going on in Europe and in Germany in particular. So the articles are out there about how Zuckerberg has been meeting with the presidents of China and all of these people so that he can be in the markets with Facebook to continue to make shareholders happy. And this is all of you that hold Facebook shares. That's very nice. I'm glad you're making some money. That's what the stock market's all about. But where's your morality? Where's the morality of Zuckerberg when it comes to the ideas of liberty? He said that he'd stand on free speech, and yet he is becoming the agent of what? The agent to stop free speech, to impede liberty. It's very interesting. So we're seeing that now here in the U.S., that whole idea of what's fake news and being able to take and discern that so that we don't offend anybody. Well, Facebook and a lot of the other social media, because they have no moral compass whatsoever, and they're living on the ideas, which I'm still writing about it, that I'm not finished, on economy over liberty. And you know something? That's exactly what John Adams talks about. And back to John Adams is that, yes, he became a Federalist, and yes, Samuel Adams had issues with him when? When it transitioned from the founders to the framers. When John Adams became a so-called Federalist and understood more of what was happening and sided with the Federalists versus those who were looking at true Republican slash Federalistic operations of a national government. Now, John Adams did a very, very great work that I have on the Constitution, but it was a Constitution in of Massachusetts. He was taking and trying to develop a purpose and rationale as to why a Constitution is necessary. Fabulous job. I have it. It's like 10 volumes in what this is. And you know what? You can go get it. And again, I'm going to sole source today and this whole thing on the dissertation on the canon and feudal law. What's important about this is that he does cover liberty. Liberty in religious liberty, liberty of the press, liberty of economics, and most of all, liberty of life and of political self-determination. The aspects of this and the parallels that I have to take. When you look first off, he determines that governance and government is and absolutely, unequivocally is a gift from God. As we see as individuals and as they knew from the Reformation as well as the First Great Awakening, guess what? If you can't handle this next statement, then I don't know what to tell you. But you know what? Their perspective is that mankind, in and of itself, without some form of governance and liberty in their true understanding of Christianity, are nothing more than sinful. Yes, they will take and attempt every effort to do what? Control other human beings. He actually brings it from the idea of domination. And he talks about that, to be dominant over other mankind. And he brings it from that perspective of what was that generation and era where we had kings and queens that were over everything. And from what has been determined during that whole Reformation period all the way up through to where we were in 1765 is that kings and queens should absolutely submit to the living Christ first and foremost and understand that their authority as leaders, any political leader, I'm going to take it because he talks about it even further, as well as many other have written, is that any political leader must be first a servant of the living Christian God, okay, or the Judeo-Christian God. Other than that, you can't have any morals, values, or principles, okay? And that's just the reality. That's what our founders believed, and that's the substance, all right? And he backs off a little bit on that, only to the extent knowing that everyone is not going to be a believer in Christ, but at the same time, there is a moral determination that is set in law that then determines it. But what he talks about here, and we're going to get into more of the detail in the next section, is that with canon law and feudal law, there is a perversion that happens because of sinful man, and the whole idea of even canon law being the law that was decided upon by the Catholic Church and even the Episcopalian slash Anglican form of religion in the Protestant world, as well as then we'll talk about what feudal law is, where we have modern feudalism right in our own time. Now, in looking at that, let's see, he really starts this out from an observation at the very beginning, and this is something that's going to carry through as to why we're in the mix that we're in, is that ignorance and inconsideration are the two great causes of the ruin of mankind. And this is from a Dr. Tillotson, and what he wrote in talking about mankind, both in a spiritual and in a temporal state. Well, I went back and I did a little bit of research on Tillotson. I'll tell you what, he was a very interesting individual, pastor, became a bishop within the Anglican Church and that structure. And his wisdom is very, very interesting to read. But and you look at here that the earliest ages of the world, absolute monarchy seems to have been the universal form of government. Kings and a few of their great counselors and captains exercised cruel tyranny over the people who held the rank and scale of intelligence in those days, but little higher than the camels and elephants that carried them and their engines to war. What he talks about as he starts looking at canon law and feudal law is that the people were suppressed in their ability to gain in knowledge and understanding. He brings about this whole idea that whenever a general knowledge and sensibility have prevailed among the people, arbitrary government and every kind of oppression have lessened and disappeared in proportion. Wow. Man has certainly an exalted soul and the same principle in human nature. So some of the things that he said, that when you look at different power structures, that what it does is it brings people to slavery. Our educational system, which I'm going to hammer on probably heavily in the last segment for today, is that we don't teach people our foundation. And he struggled with that. John Adams struggled with that in this message, in this dissertation. And the struggle is that if you don't teach people our foundational truths, then you end up with the anarchy that we're seeing today. And when you add into it the subversion and usurpation that is being taught in school and universities, which he addresses back at that time, then you end up again with what we have. And the only way to real liberty is a real knowledge of biblical truths and an understanding of the historical perspectives which bring us to a real development, a real unity, a real designation of how we are to self-govern and then how we are to govern within a greater society. Otherwise, you know what? If you don't have the knowledge and you can't put it to work, you're nothing more than a slave. And that's what happens under the feudal system as you become a slave. So come on back in the next segment as we dig in a little bit more into this dissertation of canon and feudal law. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns the Anti-Federalist. They got it right. Today, we're talking about what became a Federalist is John Adams. But first, I want to remind you is that the Liberty Works Radio Network, as I always do, is a listener-funded network. And it's incumbent upon us to take and learn more of who's on the network, as well as take and participate. You know what? What I'm finding is that people listen, people B&M, and people sit on their laurels. I will say that maybe a lot of you folks here are very active. I don't know, because you're not giving me any feedback as to who you are, what you do, and whether you really care. So what I'm going to assume is that I need to give you that little cattle prod in that participate here at Liberty Works Radio Network. Do something. You know, what we're finding more and more now is worse than, and we're going to talk about, worse than what was happening in 1765, to the point that, and this is nothing to you, but we need people to participate in this, and also the other things that we're doing. And yes, that's part of what I said last week, is that, you know, go read the end of the Declaration of Independence and encourage others to as well, because it is our time, our fortune, and our sacred honors that are required to maintain this liberty. And Sam Adams talks about that a lot, and John Adams actually brings that out here, because here we are suffering under the Stamp Act, to which we're suffering under all sorts of bureaucratic tyranny that breaks down from a relational perspective. Now, the whole thing that John Adams in many ways is talking is that we have rights, and that our rights are given to us by God, and he knows that, just about everybody then did, and that what we see is that the two things then where tyranny, and he talks about it this way. And, oh, so let me step back a reason before I get into these two reasons for tyranny at the point of the paper. I found this again. I've read this over several different times, but I found it again and thought it was appropriate in that I've been looking at policy development in our founders' perspective and how it is absolutely the same as it is in our present generation for the Samuel Adams Center for Political Science. But one of the things I'm finding is people really don't care whether their youth take and learn how to be that next generation of leaders or not. They say they do. They send them to different universities or schools, but I don't think that they are getting their money's worth, nor do I think that they're understanding that it takes more to develop leaders and understand how policy should function from foundational perspectives instead of the, I'll call it, the corrupted modern perspective of academia, which I've already established in the last session and John Adams is going to establish here shortly, is corrupted. Even at that time, to the extent that they want to dumb people down so that we can have, instead of feudal law, we can have modern feudalism. So with that, let me take you through real quick, and I'm going to make a comparison here, and I'm not going to stay on it because it could be five programs of itself. He says here, quote, since the promulgation of Christianity, the two greatest systems of tyranny that have sprung from this original are the canon law and the feudal law. The desire of dominion, that great principle by which we have attempted to account for so much good and so much evil, is, when properly restrained, a very useful and noble movement in the human mind. But when such restraints are taken off, it becomes an encroaching, grasping, restless, and ungovernable power. So we've seen a number of systems in iniquity contrived by the great for the gratification of this passion in themselves. We see that, ladies and gentlemen, all the time when people go to Congress. We wonder what happens to them. They get in there with the power elite. We talk about the swamp. It becomes that whole aspect of what is dominion. and what is it for people to assume power. He really hammers here on this idea of what happened with popery that developed the canon law, what happened within the confines of a certain religious organizations, that being the Catholic Church and the Episcopal method of the Anglican Church, which developed bishops, both developing a canon which suppressed the people, removed their abilities to become knowledgeable, removed their ability to become learned, except for a certain few. And what he says, when you do that, what you have then created is slaves, because then everything that is riveted in the minds of the people are taken and determined by those leaders. He says that what happens here, all these opinions, they were enabled to spread and rivet among the people by reducing their minds to a state of sordid ignorance and staring timidity, and by infusing into them a religious horror of letters and knowledge, without taking and allowing them, so it was dictatorial as to what they would learn, and as a result, that alone caused the cruelty, the shamefulness, the deplorable servitude, and which subordinated the people to tyrants, both in the church and outside of the church. And then when you look at the other system, that which was formed and that which allowed man and businesses to control then the rest through kings, then what you had is another cruelty. You had another tyranny that was a lust for power, which had dictated the canon law. It was soon adopted by almost all the princes of Europe and wrought into the constitutions of their governments. With that, then the feudal law came about, and once again, it was a confederacy that lasted across the whole people, and the people were held in ignorance, their liberty was withdrawn, and with that, knowledge and virtue seemed to have deserted the earth. One age of darkness succeeded the other until God began in his divine providence. He raised up champions during the Reformation. So from this time of the Reformation to the first settlement of America, knowledge gradually spread in Europe, but especially in England, in proportion as that increased, the spread among the people, ecclesiastical and civil tyranny lessened. So it came, as you see, more and more that education, and as people began individually to be able to read and read the scriptures, their knowledge increased of what true liberty was. So what we're seeing is, because, and I'll say it, you know, because this is my opinion, I don't know, you know, the young Zuckerberg personally, but I can tell by what he says, what he writes, how he runs his business, it's the fruits of his labor show that he has no moral continuity across that which he does. He has no morals or virtue that is grounded in any substance. And we see that in everything in America, and what we see it is in Congress, and especially in the bureaucracies in particular. The moral values upon which our nation was supposed to be and intended to be founded are lacking. They're just not there. We see that over and over again. And so the people struggle. And what he says here is not a religion alone, as commonly supposed, but it was a love of universal liberty and a hatred, a dread, a horror of the infernal confederacy before described that projected, conducted, and accomplished the settlement of America. Now, he talks about the Puritans taking and coming over, and what was it? What was that common ground that was there that had them move towards the essence of freedom? And we know that the Pilgrims and the Puritans in particular, what they were was, and he meant the Puritans, not just the Pilgrim, but the Puritans, is that all the Puritans wanted to do is make a few changes in the Episcopal Anglican Church that would take, and a lot of them were form more than they were a basic biblical truth. But because of the lust of power there within the Anglican Church itself, they convinced the secular authority that the Puritans were out to lunch, and the other groups of the dissenters, which forced them to leave the country. They went to the Netherlands. They went to Amsterdam. Then they left from there and went to America. And some of the things that he talks about here is that we have to understand that when this transition happened, that the great... you know, I got to just go through. You got to read this. I'm going to give you the access to it. You got to read it on your own. And one of the things that I want people to be clear on is that you have to understand the setting. So the what was happening in Catholicism and popery, as well as in the Anglican Church at that time, were very, very suppressive. That doesn't happen in America today. We see that there are a number of still, you know, solid beliefs within Catholicism. That's within the context of their belief system, and that the Anglican Church, the Episcopal Church, for all sense and purposes, has dissolved into meaningless, nothingless, unbiblical perspectives. So within the context of what this was from that historical perspective, John Adams, in speaking of both popery and bishopry, is very interesting and clear. But where I equate it to the enslavement in religion is today under Islam. And that is usurpation and tyranny at its fullest, and it deserves no place in America. So Sharia would be that component that I'm talking about. Sharia law has no place in America, period. And you have to understand that. Then you have to equate that within the context of what John Adams is writing here, relative to those other two components. So what just going through here and looking at that, what it comes down to is the very simple fact that when people are kept stupid, you remain stupid. And we have a lot of stupid people that are coming out of universities. That was the first thing that the Founding Fathers really established, was universities, so that there would be this dispersion of true knowledge coming from historical perspective. John Adams laments very much here that the educational system was, in his time, and we'll get into it again in the next segment, being undermined. But then he talks about the whole feudal system and how that was detested. It takes and it brings a servile dependency of the people. And, you know, it's all about work. It's all about economy. It's all about making money and take your mind off of liberty. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what it really comes to, is that what we have going on in America today. And in my opinion, and I'm going to, I'm not opinionated at all, you know that. Well, the reality is what we have is that people are more interested in how they're going to have the money to retire, which is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. They want to know how they have more money to go spend on the lotto, or how they can go, sit at the bar and do pull tabs and all of these other things, than what it is to preserve their liberty. Because they don't understand what liberty is anymore. It's gone. It's foreign. It's not anything that what it is that our founders said. So this was very interesting, is that when we talk about liberty, he says that religious liberty, what Jesus has made us free. Wow. John Adams said the only way to have liberty, even in the context of the rest of humanity, is understanding that Jesus Christ sets men free. A constitution so contradictory to all the principles which govern mankind can never be brought about, one should imagine, but by foreign conquest or native usurpation. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we come back into the next segment, it's amazing that the Founding Fathers absolutely understood, John Adams understood, is that true liberty only comes through liberty in Jesus Christ. So come on back and hear more about why the Anti-Federalists got it right and the founders got it right before the Maryland Convention. Thanks a lot. Come on back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns, the Anti-Federalist Got It Right, here on Liberty Works Radio Network. Yes, liberty does work when you understand it. When you have knowledge of the foundational truths, then there is liberty. And we're going to go back just for a moment because I think John Adams, you know, Sam Adams' cousin, nailed it in 1765. Is that, you know, you can't have liberty, and the real source of liberty, according to what he articulates here, is in Jesus. So, just going back a little bit here, based on the feudal issues, and then we're going to get into the educational, but I had to come back to this statement here in the dissertation. It says, they knew, and this being our founders knew when they came to America and the things that they developed, they knew that government was a plain, simple, intelligible thing, founded in nature and reason, and quite comprehensible by common sense. My goodness, you have the same things that he's going to talk about next, is that the elite don't think you can understand how government should work. That's not what the people that came to America believed. They believed that government is simple. And that's why at the Samuel Adams Center for Political Science, we're trying to help students understand that. But you know what? I don't think anybody cares. I don't think you care. You want to be just or people out there want to be the sheeple. I don't know about you. I don't know you personally. And again, you don't contact me at tom@samuelAdamsReturns.com. You don't get on Facebook and let me know, hey, Tom, you're doing a great job. Anyway, it's we'll get to hear what John Adams was saying. And so he says that, you know, government, it was a plain, simple, intelligible thing. He goes on that the founders of America, those that landed, those Puritan founders in that, detested all the base services and servile dependencies of the feudal system. They knew that no such unworthy dependencies took place in the ancient seats of liberty, the republics of Greece and Rome, and they thought all such slavish subordinations were equally inconsistent with the constitution of human nature and that religious liberty which Jesus had made them free. There you go. This was certainly the opinion that they had formed. And they were far from being singular or extravagant in thinking so. Many celebrated modern writers in Europe have espoused the same sentiments. Lord Kames, and this was their modern writers, Lord Kames, a Scottish writer of great reputation, whose authority in this case ought to have the more weight, as his countrymen have not the most worthy ideas of liberty. And the Scottish Reformation really developed the whole ideas of liberty. Speaking of the feudal laws, Lord Kames says, quote, a constitution so contradictory to all the principles which govern mankind can never be brought about, one should imagine, but by foreign conquest or native usurpation. End quote. We have a lot of native usurpation going on. That was the whole Obama administration. That was part of the George Bush's administration and so on all the way back. You can look and we talk about that in other programs. He goes on to say, Rousseau, speaking of the same system being the feudal system, calls it the most inquisitionist and absurd form of government by which human nature was so shamefully degraded. End quote. Oh, he just goes on. He says, talks about lands and holding land and so on and so forth. You know, he just goes on to say that the feudal system is an evil system. But when knowledge diffused generally through the whole people, there is liberty. Their civil and religious principles being that of the founders, those landing in America, therefore, conspired to prompt them to use every measure and take every precaution in their power to propagate and perpetuate knowledge. For this purpose, they laid the early foundations of colleges and invested them with ample privileges and emulations. And people had to pay for them. And that if you didn't pay for them, you know what? They came back and worked, especially on the wealthy. You had to pay. It was the form of taxation. You need to pay. And if there were towns and that didn't want to do public education, those towns were taken to task. And there was a penalty set for those that would not put up the public expense for good, solid, truthful, foundational education. Not the garbage we have today. We're not getting educated. What we're doing is returning our kids to a feudal system. And he talks about that because what we have here, as you look at education, and I'm going to read this section again because I think it's critical, and hopefully we'll get through it, is that a Native America, so here he's talking about, as a Native American was those that he considered were from the founding father, from the 1600s as they landed. So when you had this establishment of education, he says, a Native of America who cannot read and write is as rare in appearance as a Jacobite or a Roman Catholic, that is, as rare as a comet or an earthquake. It has been observed that we are all of us, being all of the founders, even at that period of time, over and over, I'm going to take this, and he says, that we are all of us, lawyers, divines, politicians, and philosophers. And I have good authority to say that all candid foreigners who have passed through this country and conversed freely with all sorts of the people here will allow that they have never seen so much knowledge and civility among the common people in any part of the world. It is true, there has been among us a party for some years, consisting chiefly not of the descendants of the first settlers of this country, but of high churchmen and high statesmen imported since, who affect to censure this provision for the education of our youth as a needless expense and an imposition upon the rich in favor of the poor, and as an institution productive of idleness and vain speculation among the people, whose time and attention, it is said, ought to be devoted to labor and not to public affairs or to examination into the conduct of their superiors. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Common Core. This is a number of what has happened in our education system. This is the corruption that has come in through socialism and the influence of the 60s communists, who are now the professors in the universities, who are the teachers in elementary school, have removed the morality, the Ten Commandments, and any idea of saying that I'll pray from you or for you within even the school districts. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what happens to re-enslave the people into modern feudalism, is that all you need to do is get educated to get a good job, make some money, and replicate I used it from two different perspectives. Is this what we are creating, the matrix, that everybody is plugged in there just as an energy component under this modern feudalism and kept dumb, and they think that their knowledge is expansive, where in fact it's not, it has no moral guidance to it? Or is it the Borg, where you're assimilating and being forced to assimilate into something that was never intended by the founding fathers? Ladies and gentlemen, did you know that at the time of when John Adams, Sam Adams, and all these guys wrote, 90% of the people were literate? That's why John Adams can say that it was known of America that we were all lawyers, we were all divines, we were all politicians, we were all philosophers. Ladies and gentlemen, our people today are stupid. You can watch the things on YouTube, and you know, to call for Obama coming back, and the ridiculous ideas that people come up with, it's because there is no foundation. He talks about in here that the root of all truth was from our founders understanding that whole frame and of knowledge, the framework of the nature and knowledge as their great creator who does nothing in vain has given them understanding and a desire to know, but besides this, they have a right, an indisputable, unalienable, indefensible, divine right that those most dreaded and envy kinds of knowledge, I mean that the characteristics and conduct of their rulers be submissive unto God. Rulers are no more than attorneys, agents, and trustees for the people. And if they cause, and if their interests and trust is insidiously betrayed or wantonly trifled away, the people have a right to revoke the authority that they themselves have deputed and constitute abler and better agents, attorneys, and trustees. And the preservation of the means of knowledge among the lowest ranks is of more importance to the public than all property, all the rich men in the country have. You know, ladies and gentlemen, this is what we have to get back to, is the understanding. And this is, you know, the slavery that has occurred in modern times within our inner cities. And I'm not just talking about blacks. There's a lot of whites. There's a lot of Hispanics. There's a lot of others in the inner cities that are want for true knowledge. And we don't give it to them because of the Department of Education and the likes of billionaires like Gates and so on. They're not talking about real education. What they want is they want their computer programs to keep watch over everybody so you're all in their databases and they can determine whether you're going to be a ditch digger or you're going to be the next president. You see, that is a modern day feudalism, and that is communist determination of who becomes what. You know what? That's no different than what was happening in Germany during that World War II, trying to develop a new Aryan race. And that's what artificial intelligence, you know, I'm going on down the road on different things because I've well studied in my background in high performance computing, computer science, and a number of other things takes it to this level that there's a lot of folks out there that do not mean our good for true liberty based on what John Adams was talking about here. You know, he just goes on in about education. He goes on about the whole idea. But more so, which I'm not going to have time to get into, and for you Christians out there in particular, listen to this one very, very closely. The true source of our suffering has been our timidity. And that's with you so-called conservatives and constitutionalists. John Adams goes through this whole thing here on why is the historical or components of our timidity. Is it perhaps hereditary? Is it perhaps, you know, what people were teaching in church? Is it perhaps all of these different dispositions that came into the machine of court policy, the whole idea of what was going on in Americanism, and the idea that we need not be timid. And that's what he talks about at the end, is that as we come to the end of the program, is Christians, so-called conservatives, so-called constitutionalists, it is no time for timidity. We have to stand on these truths. And if you don't understand these truths, I'm giving this basic document to you to help you get that. But if not, then you need to support the Samuel Adams Center for Political Science. You need to bring these truths to the development of our next generation of leaders. You need to be educated yourself and then do something. I always say, get your butts out of your seats and your feet on the streets. you know what? I'm tired of people bitching and moaning. It's time to get out there and stand against and not be timid and stand against these things which are coming on us viciously. Ladies and gentlemen, come on back next week to Samuel Adams Returns because, yes, the anti-federalists, they got it right.